Himalaya.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kel Weinhold, and welcome to the Professor Is In podcast. We are thrilled to have you. I am the productivity coach for the Professor Is In, working with academics and other creatives to help them get their work done.
And I am Dr. Karen Kelski of the Professor Is In, and my team and I edit your job documents and coach you to leave the academy. Those are two different teams. And we do them at the exact same time. We are very talented at multitasking. And help you negotiate academic job offers and alt-ec job offers should any arise. And generally speaking, just do a lot of rabble-rousing on my social media about all of the atrocities of academia in 2020. Also, a lot of complaining about the vice presidential debate that was just last night from today when we are recording. Probably posted about four different memes about how annoying that was with straight cisgender white men talking over everybody and white women letting him.
Yeah, I've really been thinking today, spending a lot of time thinking about, and I saw this on Twitter, so I can't take credit for it, but it brought me up short because it was a white woman who said, I know all of us are out here identifying with Kamala, but what we should be doing is identifying with Susan, because that's the silencing that we do.
We white women. Yeah. We all want to put ourselves in Kamala's. That's for sure happening on the comment threads on the Professor Is In. It happens to all of us. It's like, no.
Not the same
way. If you're a white woman, you need to be thinking about how you're Susan Page, not right. How you're Kamala Harris.
How are you a talked over Susan, not a talked over Kamala? Mm-hmm. So I've been really thinking about that today. And just how quickly I could identify or chose to identify with Kamala. Like, oh man, mm-hmm. I know how this feels. And I mm-hmm. know that evangelical preacher, and I know that. And how quickly I just divested myself from anything mm-hmm. equivalent to mm-hmm. Susan. And in fact, mm-hmm. that's the place that we in particular are trained to just keep going, excuse me, Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Vice President.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
I think that's an exaggeration, but I still think, I mean, I did hear her say, excuse me. I did hear her get forceful once, but I'm just saying, we have a lot of reflection to do, white women. And
women go around with t-shirts that say, I'm a warrior. And all of these things, these t-shirts that, you know, people in my yoga and my dance classes are constantly wearing. And then it's like confronted with one powerful alpha white male, crumble like a fucking house of cards.
Yeah, we
just fall into line.
We are cooked in the sauce. We are cooked in the soup. I've had a couple different experiences recently. I just want to give you, this is not what the topic is today, by the way. The topic's imposter syndrome and it is a little bit about...
It's actually related.
But I just want to give you some language for something. Because I've had this happen twice now in the last year. I have a group of friends. There are five of us. And we do stuff together. We go hiking together. We go to basketball games together. We go to... You know, we just do stuff together. Mm-hmm. It's a group of people. We've known each other for 20, 25 years. And we've had three different incidents. One I won't... is sort of a variation, but two in particular, where we have been sitting and talking in a group spread out with COVID, but mm-hmm. just sitting around.
Social distance gatherings.
But I mean, before COVID, where mm-hmm. we were in an outdoor space having a conversation. Mm-hmm. And a white man felt compelled to come up and join our conversation. Mm-hmm. So we hiked up to the top of a butte here in town for a friend of mine's birthday. It was 7:30 in the morning, and we're sitting on the top of a mountain having a conversation, holding our coffee cups, laughing. And this man came up and said something to us. And I said, hello, good morning. And he went off, and he was unusual. And then he came back mm-hmm. while we were talking and stopped and said, I have it was something like a spiritual observation or a spiritual contribution. And I just turned around and said, you're going to have to go have it somewhere else because we're in the middle of a conversation that you're interrupting. Mm-hmm. And that happened a few months ago, and I can't remember the incident, but it was the same thing, same group of people, same group of women. I mean, mm-hmm. me turning around and saying, you're going to have to stop that. Mm-hmm. And then another incident where we were all together and a guy got really aggressive with me and I just stood and looked at him. I didn't say anything. I didn't argue with him. I just stared at him and he kept mm-hmm. getting madder and madder. And I just kept looking at him mm-hmm. like, when are you going to go away? But the point is that there are two things. There is something in our gender and our race that makes it so white men think that they can come in and join the conversation.
Mm-hmm. That they're entitled to our time, space, attention, and right. energy.
And I'm not saying I think that happens in triplicate for mm-hmm. women of color, certainly. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we own that space. I'm saying that there's a particular dynamic that happens there. Mm-hmm. Because it's almost like a joining in instead of it's a dominating by joining in. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is how that whole group of women, I'm the one who says, stop it.
Yeah, because they wouldn't.
Right. Well, I think they would more. Yes, right now they would. I mean, before they wouldn't. I mm-hmm. think they're, I mean, it's interesting because they are all much more cisgendered. Mm-hmm. They're not all straight, but it's half and half. Mm-hmm. And they're much more less visible than I am. Mm-hmm. And much more likely to freeze. Mm-hmm. And I just think we just need to practice. So I'm just giving you that language, folks, to just say, no, I'm sorry. You don't even have to say I'm sorry.
Yeah, try not to. I know the temptation to say that. Try to script it without that.
And I did not say I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I said, no, I did. I just said, no, I'm sorry. We're in the middle of a conversation. You're going to need to go elsewhere. So, mm-hmm. But anyway, that's just a digression.
Well, let me share my story from when I wore I've Heard Enough from Old White Men t-shirt right. to a political event down downtown Eugene. And a white guy came by and, you know, he was a hippie. Like, we have a lot of hippies in Eugene. And he was, you know, gray haired. And, you know, he was one of those elder hippies. Elder statesman of the hippie world, of which we have so many in Eugene. And he walks up, he reads my shirt, and he says, wait a minute. Why? I have things to say that are valuable. And I just looked at him and I said, I don't want to hear them. And he said, no, that's not right. You need to listen to me because I'm on your side and I have things to say. And I said, nevertheless, I'm not interested. And he said, well, I'm one quarter Cherokee anyway. I said, oh, you did not just say that. I am even less interested in talking to you right now, and I'm not listening. And I turned away. And he was just beside himself. And it really is a thing to practice to recognize the way that white men feel entitled to our time and attention, and then to realize the temptations that straight white women or gay white women or any white women, queer white women, doesn't matter, white women feel to capitulate to that white male entitlement, and then to start scripting and practicing very, very firm and non-apologetic and non-self-justifying. Oh, I would listen to you, but I'm really very busy right now, or I want to listen to the speaker. Or no, you don't know them anything. You don't know them an explanation or anything at all. It's just no, not interested, not talking to you, moving on. And then do it.
Right. Okay. So I don't know how we got on that.
I mentioned the debates and we
right.
both remembered that.
Pence talking over Senator Harris
with
and
his
Senator,
cold, dead
and,
eyes.
And just, I was just aware of the entire time of the just stunning tightrope skillfulness, maneuvering that Senator Harris had to do to deal with Pence and with Susan, whatever her last name
Page.
Is. Page. I keep thinking, who's Page? I keep seeing stuff on Twitter that says Page, and I think, who's Paige? Right. But now I know it's Susan Page. We're using her last name. I see. Anyway, I just sat there watching it thinking, this is why you can't even come close to understanding the skill level at play here, that if you've gotten that far, what you've had to navigate is stunning.
Right.
Stunning.
Yeah. It's a little bit that popped into my mind was how they used to say about Ginger Rogers that she did everything Fred Astaire did in high heels and backward.
Right.
And it's like everything Kamala Harris did last night was high heels, backward, and with her hands tied and with, I don't know, 24 other obstacles placed in her path. And she had to just sit there and look assertive, competent, yet non-threatening.
Well, there's always going to be somebody who's going to be threatened, of course, by virtue of her existence.
You know, it was just, I mean, I was struck, just like you, I was struck by the performance, the skills.
Just the mad skills.
The mad skills that we were watching.
I was just so frustrated. But so, interestingly enough, that debate got me thinking, well, maybe it's not interesting. I guess that will be for the readers to decide, or the listeners to decide. Right. I always say readers, like people read podcasts. It's very odd. Yeah.
I'd engage with more podcasts if I could read them.
it's not a podcast then.
Okay. Whatever.
All right. So for whatever reason, I went down this path and I don't know why. But I got to thinking about imposter syndrome, and I got to thinking about how many people, and it was a conversation that I had with a client yesterday on a coaching call, and about imposter syndrome, but also about how hard it is to get any thinking done when you have so many things pressing against you. So Kamala Harris and her amazing tightrope walking then got me thinking about how squeezed in the space is for thinking because you're having to navigate so much.
Right.
And then I was thinking, I had said to somebody, you know, of course you'd be able to have discipline changing thoughts if you were a cisgendered white man in your attic while everybody did everything, but that's not the case. So, and then we were talking about the grief of that, of realizing I could do that if I could get the space.
If only. Yeah.
So then it got me thinking about how many people I talk to because of that, because they don't have the space to do it, individualize it, and make it about them.
Of course.
And how they are imposters to this syndrome because they don't come up with the great ideas that person comes up
forgetting
with.
Forgetting the endless structural obstacles that they've been confronted with from day one. And I mean, that's what we do. That's what we tend to do. We tend to individualize and blame ourselves, even when intellectually we know.
Right.
And we can point to them. But then in those moments, it's like, damn it, Karen, why can't you? Or, you know, and other folks who've confronted much more than I ever have, certainly.
Right. And how many times and things I mean, and you and I talk about this all the time, and I don't know that it's entirely visible to the world looking at us of how many times we're about to do something or about to face something and second guess whether we're qualified or whether we're going to fuck it up or I don't know about this. Mm-hmm. And certainly you have less of that than I do. You're much more like, fuck it, I'm going to do it. And I'm much more like, I don't know, this could not go well. And at the same time, both of us individualize that again by even making it our, see if I can be articulate here. Like, okay, this imposter syndrome is actually laid on you from the very beginning, telling you, you actually don't belong here because we don't want you. Mm-hmm. So making a system where you don't fit, repeatedly doing it, beating you up.
Some of us raised in families that literally said that.
Right. And so then, you get there, you start to individualize it. Maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I can't ever do this. Maybe I don't think well enough. Someone somewhere says something about how maybe this isn't right for you and it pierces your heart and stays there. Mm-hmm. And you individualize it as there's something wrong with me.
Sure.
Right? So we're talking about the systemic individual thing. But then I saw this quote from Sonia Renee Taylor, who wrote, "The body is not an apology."
Mm-hmm. And if you don't follow her on Instagram, please follow her on Instagram and read her book, and she's quite extraordinary.
Yeah. And I really like to listen to her stuff because she challenges me. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of times when I think I've got it, right? I got this.
Yeah.
You know, I get a little
I'm
bit
woke.
Yeah. I don't like to say that, but I do. But I do internally.
That had quotation marks around
right.
It.
But I do internally every once in a while think, oh, I've got this figured out, right? Oh, I've got this figured out. And then she in particular is one of those teachers for me who, just as I think I've like pulled the last little thread of white supremacy and racism and all of that out of a small little patch of the fabric of my life, she says, how about this threat? And I like slash am aware that I get pushed.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really good thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, saw this quote from her the other day that said, every time I'm in that space of comparison, I'm a cog holding up oppression. Mm-hmm. As long as my value is dependent on someone's greater or lesser value, mm-hmm. then it demands a world where there are people that are less valuable than me. Mm-hmm. And I had one of those like emoji mind blown kind mm-hmm. of things. Like, okay, this just isn't about me and my sitting over here in my little corner of imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. I'm actually buying into the idea mm-hmm. that there are people better or worse
or
than
worse
I.
Or worse based on their because outcome, if I say their productivity, I'm worse, their qualification. Yep.
If I say I'm worse.
Totally.
Then that means I'm going to be able to say somebody else is worser. Mm-hmm. Right?
And someone's better. Yep. For sure. It's true. So it's all this kind of capitalist value. Value by through productivity, value through accomplishment, you know, the whole thing. And you know what else? You know what that's really consistent with is the Knapp ministry.
Yes.
And she's had a couple of tweets lately that have really struck me, which is, I'm going to paraphrase here because it's not in front of me, but I think she said, I could get into bed and stay there for a week and I would still be as valuable as anybody else on this planet, because my value is not determined by what I produce.
Right. And now I'm not even going to be able to quote where I got this, but the quote I read just within the last few months of, there is nothing you can do. And this one, I say it to myself every day, and every day there's a part of my body that says, I don't know about this.
It's true for other people, but it's not true for me.
But the quote is something to the effect of, there is nothing you can do. Zero that you can do to make yourself more lovable. Mm-hmm. And do you feel your body kind of resist that?
Yeah, well, you said that to me. You texted me that the other day because I was feeling anxious about something. I forget what now, something I had mm-hmm. to do. And I was like, yeah, whatever.
It's so nice to know that my heartfelt support is dismissed.
Yeah. Well, I put a thing on the Professor's Inn just yesterday that said, it was a screen cap of a tweet that said, your worth is not determined by your productivity in a time, or you should not expect yourself to be productive in a time of prolonged crisis. And then my brain, except me.
Right. Except me. Yeah, right.
Except me.
Okay. So just you guys who are out there listening and taking your walk or doing whatever you're doing right now, just stop and notice if you say to yourself in your head or out loud, there is nothing that I can do to make myself more lovable. And find out where all of the arguments come up, right? Mm-hmm. All of the arguments. Yes, I could. I could be this. I could be mm-hmm. that. I could be this.
I could be thinner. I could make more money.
Right. I could be nicer.
There's, it could be nicer. Right. That's not one that
popped into your head, right?
Into my head,
but that's likable, right? Uh-huh. That's like people wanting to engage with right. you, but that doesn't hit at your core value,
right?
So if you there's that, and then the if you're moving into that, right? If you're judging, saying yes, I could be thinner, I could be wealthier, then you're already in a place of judgment about people who aren't. Then you're right. walking down the street going, oh, you could use a little bit of exercise. Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. what the hell with your hair? Mm-hmm. And as a friend of mine's daughter.
Why are you wearing that?
Right. A friend of mine's daughter is constantly saying, and I so appreciate it, is if you are commenting on another person's body, you are out of line. Mm-hmm. You have nothing to say. Mm-hmm. Be quiet. Mm-hmm. Don't care if they're dressed in a clown suit.
Right.
None of your business.
Yeah. And you're commenting on yours.
But then if we just keep that thread and we go over to productivity and we go over to imposter syndrome and we go over there and say, if you are beating the shit out of yourself mm-hmm. for not being good enough because you're not doing X, Y, and Z, there are people you are claiming are more valuable than you are mm-hmm. or less valuable than you are. Mm-hmm. And that just, I mean, I just still am kind of, wow.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, what?
For sure. And well, I feel it in my bones. For one thing, So this is a partial understanding, not a universal one, of course, but I know that when I was thoroughly invested in the academic external validation system, that I 100% judged myself on my productivity and that I judged others based on the same hierarchy. You are more productive, therefore you are more valuable. You are less productive, therefore you are less valuable. And I totally operated in that, which mm-hmm. meant that I was an agent of the toxicity. And that I was in my work with grad students, I was inculcating that value system mm-hmm. into the students I worked with. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm out of it, I can look at it and know that I'm not, or at least not in anything like the same way. Mm-hmm. But there are other realms where I'm still doing it.
Right. Well, and I think the thing that, I always get pushback when I'm coaching is say, people will say, yeah, but other people are judging me based on what I produce. And my pushback always is they're judging your work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you, folks, no matter what your job, if you're involved in capitalism, if you're producing things for someone else, you're not just sitting on your little farm raising your, cabbage. And with your solar system and not engaging with anybody.
Although I suppose I think farmers have quite a bit of competition with one another, but go ahead.
No, I meant for yourself, not for sale. I just meant if you've managed to just move out of the capitalist system, which is like four people in the world who are doing that. So, I think there are actually more than that, but I'm just saying if you are involved in that system, then you have to produce, then you are choosing to produce work to stay in that system. You're choosing to do that work to stay in that job. So one of the things I do with coaching all the time is remind people that they're choosing to do it. Because mm-hmm. they'll say, I have to write the article. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. You choose to because you want this job. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Let's recognize it's capitalism. Let's do it. But that's your job. It's writing your article is no different than writing your report for your corporation or doing redesigning your website or stacking all the boxes. Mm-hmm. To stack the shelves, it's all the product, work product. It's work product.
Right.
It's not you.
Right.
And if we can continue to separate mm-hmm. your work product from your actual identity and self, mm-hmm. which the Academy is very happy to squish them together really quickly. Right. Like, let's just heat those up with a big piece of like wax between them so you can't get them apart.
Yeah. I mean, all of capitalism does that, of course, the capitalist labor market, but I would venture to say that the intellectual professional fields do it the most, maybe mm-hmm. like the medical field and
the identity in your work,
where your identity is your work and your work is your identity, and certainly in academia, because it's emergent out of our own creatives as well, artists, I'm sure, but it's emergent out of our own. We're making meaning. Mm-hmm. We're coming up with an analysis of a thing that didn't exist until we thought it and we write it down, we put it out in the world. I can see why it's so hard to separate that.
Sure, it's your creative work. It's mm-hmm. no different than being a painter or a sculptor. It's actually all you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're putting it out there to be judged and assessed. And mm-hmm. I think in some ways, artists understand that once it leaves them, it moves over into other people's perception of it and it's no longer them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of artists, it's like, whatever you do with it now is what you do with it. Right. What I did with it is what I did mm-hmm. with it. Like our friend who's a painter, when she talks about her work, she separates very strongly her process and the viewer's view of it.
Right.
And she doesn't, the viewer's engagement with it has nothing to do with her process and why she created what she did.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think there's much to be learned by following the practices of artists, which I say all the time. But mm-hmm. I just think, I don't know, I just keep looping around to this. If you're sitting there thinking you're less than or thinking you're better than,
mm-hmm.
you we'll just get back to the unstuck mantra. Comparison is the thief of joy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also in some way, and maybe this will activate you, right? Maybe your own personal well-being won't activate you. Maybe you're in this time in 2020, you're an activist enough that one of the things that will motivate you to step out of imposter syndrome and comparison is to understand that you are a cog in a system of oppression when you do that.
Yeah.
And that's the part that blew my mind. It was like,
right.
This is not just my little special little corner of the misery world.
Right.
I'm actually part of a system of oppression when I do that.
Yeah. I mean, every so often, you know, we can look at the current crisis, the collapse of hiring and the job market and the economy and the environment and the political system all of these things that we thought were stable ground beneath our feet and discover they're not at all. You know, some of the more flexible thinkers amongst us are saying, you know, something new is being born. You right. know that. I have trouble seeing that or investing in it or believing it because I'm so consumed by the destruction and the collapse and everything, the suffering that's happening, and the fear around it. But I think that it is true too, that we can look at this kind of state of devolution and say what in the absence of the systems that we thought were working, and they weren't working, they were never working for the vast majority of people, but those people weren't important enough to listen to. But if we think about them collapsing, what can come up in their space and perhaps some kinds of ways of being that are not based on oppressing others.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to, expand out a little bit. When you say people that weren't important enough to listen to, you're saying that in a sense of recognition of
power politics,
right?
That their voices, they might have been talking, but they,
right,
the people who had power were not listening,
right? Just wanted to make,
I hope that's apparent, but
right, okay. I just think it's always important to say, you know, that what I mean by that, maybe I've been around academics too long.
In our podcast episode about not judging other people. About all this.
People who aren't worth listening to. Okay, so that's pretty much the super heavy, like hard to comprehend. And I'm just going to leave you with one last thing that when I did this on a group coaching session on Monday, left a whole bunch of people going, what? So I'm going to leave you with this.
Okay.
Other people's opinion of you is not your business.
And I guess that also means your opinion of other people is not your business. Wait. Your opinion of other people
is your problem.
Is your problem. Yeah, that better way to put it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
it's a you problem, not a them problem.
It's a you problem, not a them problem. Mm-hmm. And other people's opinion of you is
a
not
them problem, not a you problem.
Your business. Mm-hmm. Sit with that one. All right. That's it. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.